I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science in a good way, as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions, as decided, obviously, by us. Isaac Asimov once said the most exciting phrase in science is not Eureka, but that's funny. Respectfully, we think you can have a bit of both. I'm Rick Edwards, joined as ever by my, what are we calling you these days?
We're not saying sidekick, that's for sure.
I think sidekick works.
Informer?
You're not getting co-host. I'll tell you that's a deal breaker. No way are you getting co-host.
Wow.
It's sidekick.
Get on
Sorry.
With it. Just get on with it.
All right. Dr. Michael Brooks, not a real doctor. This week it is your turn to lead. I set you quite a good question, and there's a bit of context here as well. Like, it's kind of relevant, isn't it?
Yeah, it is relevant. So you said to me, basically, should we fear an alien invasion?
Yes, cheery stuff.
Which is a good question. And it turns out, actually, this year is the 50th anniversary of NASA first sending a message into space, basically like a greetings card from the human race.
Yeah.
It went on Pioneer 10 in March 1972.
The golden record.
No, that was later. So that was on the Voyager ones. So this was not quite gold. It was gold anodized aluminium. And it was just a plaque placed on board Pioneer 10.
Yeah. So just like a card, like a Hallmark card.
Yeah, kind of.
Made out of metal.
And with a picture of like a man waving, naked, obviously, naked man waving next to a woman who's not waving. Neither of them have any pubic hair, naked, but no pubic hair. Uh-huh. It's 1970s. That's quite advanced, isn't it?
That's quite weird in a way.
It does feel like it. I mean, he's got a penis.
Like Joy of Sex.
She hasn't got a vagina, so obviously that was considered a step too far.
Quite confusing stuff for the aliens.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're going to make of that, to be honest. But it basically said it had a sort of pictogram of where this message came from in the solar system.
Oh, so sort of third rock from the sun.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that was 50 years ago now.
It's very. I tell you what's great about that is someone sitting down and thinking, are we 100% sure that a wave
will translate. Is that definitely friendly?
Well, I like the idea that somebody thought about it, because I wonder if they did.
Of course, they must have done. They must have thought, does that look in any way aggressive? Well, not to us, but I mean, no way of knowing.
Yeah, because if you like smile at a chimpanzee, that's aggressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
very risky business sending messages to aliens that may or may not exist.
That is what we're talking about.
The more we learn about the universe, the harder it is to believe we're alone.
It's a story that's truly out of this world.
Navy ships and pilots capturing images about their experiences with what they claim are UFOs.
Whether they're little green men or not, it's becoming increasingly accepted by scientists that there is likely to be life beyond planet Earth. So if aliens do exist, how likely are they to pay us a visit? And if they do, what can we expect? It would be handy to know if they dine on human flesh beforehand. Today we're discussing extraterrestrials, space waste, and the incredible phenomena of Oumuamua, the first known interstellar object detected passing through our solar system. We're also asking whether we should be sending out signals to communicate with aliens, what the global protocol is if we're invaded, and most importantly, we're going to be posing this week's question to our expert, Avi Loeb. Should we fear an alien invasion?
So this is our sort of absolutely timeless question. Should we fear an alien invasion?
And who have we got as our expert this week?
Legend, total legend, obviously. In fact. Professor Avi Loeb, who is the Frank B. Baird Jr. Professor of Science at Harvard University.
Right, one more time, because I enjoy you saying it, struggling through the words.
Avi Loeb, the Frank B. Baird Jr. Professor of Science at Harvard University. Presumably he's not junior professor of science. He's the junior, I think, is attached to the
Frank... We wouldn't have a junior professor of science.
Frank B. Baird Jr. Professor of Science. Just to make that clear.
Sorry, are you going to read it one more time?
No,
with
I'm
the correct
not.
Inflection?
So we kicked off asking him to sort of basically set the scene. Obviously, if you're going to worry about aliens, you need to know, well, whether there's any aliens out there. Is that likely? How do we find them? And should we be telling them how to find us? Third rock from the sun, everyone.
We now know that about half of the stars, like the Sun, have a planet the size of the Earth, roughly at the same separation. And if you arrange for similar circumstances, you might as well get similar outcomes. So technological civilizations could be quite common. But that doesn't mean that most of them are available for us to communicate with, because most stars formed billions of years before the Sun. And they could have had technological civilizations that predated us by billions of years. We cannot have a phone conversation with the Mayans. The Mayan culture is gone, but we can find traces for it in archaeological sites. And in much the same way, we can look for relics from technological civilizations in space, sort of like searching for plastic bottles on the beach. Most of the time you see rocks that are naturally produced, but every now and then there is a plastic bottle that indicates a civilization is around. When you enter into a room full of strangers, it's prudent to stay quiet and listen rather than speak out, because you never know if there is a predator in the room that might pose a risk to your existence. And so, unfortunately, we've been speaking out for a while now. For more than a century, we've been sending radio waves into space. And if there is anyone within 100 light years that has the radio telescopes that we possess, then they may be aware of us already. It may take some decades or perhaps centuries before we hear back, but it would have been better if we didn't speak at all.
Now, here's what I think about that. I take his point that you don't necessarily want to be broadcasting your location to a furious alien race who are looking
obviously
for planets to try and conquer and subsume. Fine. However, inadvertently, we're sending out those signals anyway just by dint of the fact that we have TV and radio.
Yeah, so by being a civilization.
Being a technological civilization. That means that you send out signals, not coded specifically for aliens, obviously, but they're going out there.
Yeah.
So you can't really help it. So whether you're sending a specific message or not is kind of irrelevant, isn't it?
It kind of is. I mean, we haven't thought through the implications of it very well. And by the way, I worry about the kind of parties that he goes to when he walks into a room and thinks, now, is there any a predator? I mean, maybe that says something about parties at Harvard. I don't know. But I've never walked into a room and thought, I'll just wait and see if there's any predators here.
Let's see if anyone gets eaten in the next sort of half an hour.
But basically what he's saying is we probably should have kept our mouths shut. Like, we're the worst predators ever. You know, given that we've all evolved probably by the same kinds of rules and it's sort of, you know, evolution red in tooth and claw, we've really set ourselves up as the kind of rabbits of this whole thing, haven't we?
But do you not think all the others probably would have done a similar thing? Because at the point when we're developing radio, if you assume that all civilizations are going to go through something like that and be broadcasting some kind of electromagnetic waves with information, I think you would. That seems fair, doesn't it? But at the point you do that, I don't know if you're thinking that much about alien civilizations, like what's going on other planets.
That's
true. I
think
it may be inevitable that you just do it, and then later on you're like, fuck!
Especially when you realise that other civilizations might be much, much more advanced than ours is right now. So, but anyway, we'll get into that. The point is, it's kind of a bit late now. And we maybe should get a sense of the risk. But I mean, obviously, you want to do that by maybe going and looking, but that's a big long shot. Space is hard.
It's too far, isn't it?
It's too big.
It's too big.
I mean, we don't do much with people in space, and aliens is basically a needle in a haystack sort of situation. There's nothing in any reachable distance. So we're fairly sure that our solar system is devoid of intelligent life apart from us.
Yeah.
And the nearest star that we've got is Proxima Centauri, 4.25 light years away.
Yeah.
So that's a long way. We're never going there. Not with the technology that we've got, anyway.
Are we going to talk about generation chips?
Well, no, we're not. Not now. Okay. No.
All right.
No. Fine. But, I mean, effectively, you know, we've got to look for signs of technology. Like, you know, what we've sent out, presumably we can look for things that other people have sent out. So.
Or something like I liked the plastic bottle analogy on the beach. Like, spotting something in space, we're like, hold on. That's not naturally occurring.
Yeah.
Something's made that.
Yeah.
That'd be quite good.
Yeah.
Not easy to spot.
No, obviously not easy. But I mean, you know, we do look at other atmospheres of sort of distant exoplanets. We look at, you know, and we look for signals. So we've got this project called the Breakthrough Listen Project, basically, which I think in 2020 it saw a signal that it thought might have been an alien signal. That was the first signal. It's sort of listening with this vast sort of radio telescope. And actually, it turned out not to be. It was when they analysed it and worked out, they probably said it's probably of terrestrial origin and just sort of, you know, some kind of resonance or echoes sort of from something.
Right.
You know, we had the WOW.
Bit of excitement, though. The WOW.
We had the WOW signal in 1977, which has never been explained. And actually, that was so that was just one blip, basically, picked up by the Big Ear telescope in Ohio, August the 15th, 1977, the day before Elvis died. So, you know, maybe
coincidence?
I don't think so.
I mean, I was going to say yes, obviously, a coincidence.
And it was a call to go home, wasn't it?
And is it called? It's called the WOW signal because they wrote WOW.
Yeah, Jerry Amon, the guy who was operating it, wrote WOW on the printout.
Yeah,
so, but it never been explained. It came from the region of Sagittarius, and you know, it was just one blip, never repeated. So it's not really anything much to go on.
And funny actually to think that that's an alien civilization, a bit smarter than us, and they've accidentally done it, and they're like, turn it off, turn it off, turn it off.
So yeah, we don't really know. I mean, you know, we're in a position where, like you say, it's more likely. Experts think it's more likely we'll find evidence associated with extraterrestrial life than the actual signals of the life itself. So Avi basically says, don't bother looking for actual life, look for the litter.
Yeah, okay.
In my view, a very advanced civilization would potentially close itself off. I call it social distancing on a cosmic scale. They would create a cocoon inside of which they have everything they need. And being in contact with a lower level civilization would only degrade their quality of life. But that doesn't mean that we will not be able to find more about them, because they still have to throw their trash. And just like investigative journalists in Hollywood that search through the trash cans of celebrities in order to find about their private lives, we could learn about those civilizations from searching for their trash in space. Most likely, the objects that will travel the distance will be pieces of equipment, because they could survive for millions or billions of years. Biological creatures face a lot of hazards in space. There are cosmic rays that can damage any living cell. And by the way, this is a major health concern for going to Mars. We will need to protect ourselves if we want to establish a sustainable base there. And my sense is that just like plastic bottles on a beach that keep accumulating over time, we would find first evidence for technological equipment that was deposited in space that is billions of years old, probably not functional anymore. And we will see that before we can actually get in contact with living creatures out there.
So the best thing for us, if we're trying to think about, you know, will we spot an alien civilization, is to think, well, will they spot us? Like, what could they see that we've left around that they would pick up on? And that sort of gives us a clue.
So like old satellites and
old satellites, like massive amounts of space junk, basically. I mean, you have to get quite close to see it.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, does any of our space junk end up just sort of drifting off? Not really. It's all kind of orbiting, isn't it?
No, so, I mean, we've got massive amounts of stuff. NASA says there's 23,000 pieces of debris sort of in orbit that are sort of the size of a softball or larger. So, okay. You know, sort of...
Size of a softball?
Is that cricket ball?
How big's a softball?
I don't know, a bit bigger than a cricket ball, I would say.
You're leading this episode, mate. How big's a softball? Don't just say the size of a softball.
Anyway, the point is, there's stuff orbiting around us, but we've gone up to the moon and left stuff on there. Do you know how much stuff we've left on the moon? Kilograms.
Ooh,
have a guess.
So I guess we've left quite a few. So we haven't brought back. So, I mean, I'm going to say, like, several tons.
187,000 kilograms.
What?
187 tons of stuff on the moon.
I was going to sort of like 10. 187 tons.
It's mad, isn't it? So
the energy to get it up there.
Yeah.
The boggles.
Yeah. And there's probably the 1969 Apollo 11 lunar escape module is probably still in orbit. Nobody's seen it, but the calculations say it's going to be there. But then we've got, you know, the Voyager space probes, which have just disappeared out, you know, beyond the edge of our solar system.
Well, they're specifically so sent out.
There. Somebody, you know, could. Yeah.
Well, that's the idea.
In time, find them, and they've got their own little messages on them as well, haven't they?
I think a really key thing that you've just mentioned there is that we can't even see that escape pod. We sort of know that it must be up there.
Yeah.
But we can't spot it, and we are next door to the moon.
Yeah.
So aliens, they haven't got hope in hell of seeing it, have they? Like, if you imagine,
it depends on their technology, doesn't it?
I guess, yeah.
And they also.
I'm just thinking, if we were looking for that kind of debris around a planet, what on earth would we be? Like, we'd have no hope of spotting it, would we?
We probably wouldn't, but it depends how big some of it is. If you had a civilization that left a load of stuff that was big enough to, say, reflect starlight, you would see a sort of, you know, you possibly see the reflections of it sort of winking at you occasionally or something like that. And then, you know, you might say, there's something there, let's go and look. And if you had sufficiently good technology, you could go and, you know, take your starship and just go and have a look. So, you know, it's not impossible.
We might be going on to discuss this, but what about the fact that biological entities, biological life, is quite limiting? And certainly if you think you want to travel anywhere in space, like we can't really do it. What you might be interested in doing, though, is creating artificial intelligence, or the classic sort of downloading yourself. So you basically become a digital species, and then you actually can travel as far as you like, because effectively you just turn yourself off.
Yeah.
And then, you know, reboot when you're, you know, like 4 million years later, and you've arrived wherever you're aiming for.
Yeah.
So you might actually encounter digital life.
Yes, that's true. I mean, yeah, and you kind of hope that maybe that digital life doesn't have the capability to launch an attack on the planet.
It also might have, might
it? Might well have.
It might have. You feel like they're coming prepared. We'll take a quick break now, but in the second half of the show, we'll be discussing the evidence that we may have already found to prove aliens exist, Oumuamua. And as always, Avi Loeb will be answering our question this week, should we fear an alien invasion?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome back to Eureka with me, Rick Edwards, and my sidekick, Dr. Michael Brooks.
Not having that.
You are. No, I mean, you actually are.
Fine. So we were discussing before the break how to find evidence of alien civilizations and how, if a more advanced civilization does exist out there, they might not even want to talk to us. I mean, that's a thought, isn't it? There's us worrying about it. Maybe they just don't really care.
But that's one of the... Like, when people think about why we haven't had any contact with aliens, because when you run the numbers, you're like... It seems very, 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 very implausible that life wouldn't have evolved somewhere else.
Yeah.
Because there's so many opportunities and there's been so much time and so on. I really love the idea that either we're just in, without realizing it, just in an awful like backwater in the universe where aliens are like, well, we're not going to that shit. Or we're just so dumb that we're of no interest.
Yeah.
Or... This is the physicist whose name I can never remember, but you annoyed, Michio
Kaku.
Yeah, yeah. His thing, I really like his thing about ants in a, you know, quite sophisticated for ants living in their little anthill next to a motorway, even though they're right next to the motorway. The ants have absolutely no comprehension of human civilization. It's just like, it's just operating on a totally different plane, and we could be the ants.
Yeah.
We could be surrounded by aliens right now and alien life and just have no idea.
Well, it might be that we've just woken up and had an idea because, well, there's an argument that Avi Loeb makes that we may have seen evidence of an alien civilization in the form of an object that we call Oumuamua. I'll let Avi explain.
Oumuamua was the first object discovered near Earth that came from outside the solar system, and it looked very peculiar, unlike any comet or asteroid that we have seen before from within the solar system. It didn't have a cometary tail. It had most likely a flat, pancake-like geometry, and it was pushed away from the sun by reflecting sunlight. And that meant that it must be very thin, sort of like a sail. And nature doesn't produce sails. So potentially Oumuamua is the first evidence for something that was not naturally produced, that came to us from a technological civilization. And we should continue to search and look for evidence of objects similar to Oumuamua, because when I go to the kitchen and I see an ant, I get alarmed. It means that there must be many more out there. And we only surveyed the sky for a few years before we found Oumuamua with the Pan-STARRS telescope. So if we continue to survey, we will find more. And of course, the best way to figure out whether they're artificial or natural would be to take a photograph. A picture is worth a thousand words.
I got very excited when Oumuamua was spotted.
It was pretty huge, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Yeah. How big was it?
I think maybe like 800 meters long.
So if Avi's wrong, what else could it be? What are the skeptical possibilities?
Well, so people are saying, oh, maybe it's a bit of like hydrogen ice that's broken off something,
okay,
or nitrogen ice is another one. But he kind of refutes those arguments by saying there just isn't that concentration of nitrogen around, for instance, that you could form it into some big shard of ice.
Is weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is weird. So, I mean, he sort of... And then you've got the issue of, like, the fact that it sort of accelerated out of our solar system. So,
And that, because of the light that was shining on it, so that makes him think that it could be some kind of light sail.
Yeah.
Because light sails are things that we've talked about in terms of propelling crafts at high speeds.
And people say, well, it can't be a sail because it sort of tumbles end over end. You know, when we've seen it was sort of tumbling. But, you know, if it's a light sail that actually has just like gone rogue, is knackered,
yeah,
then maybe, you know, that's it just happened to be caught and it works very well as a light sail. So there's lots of controversy about it. I mean, most people would say, come on, that seems, you know, too far-fetched. Mm. Yeah.
But Avi's a believer.
Avi's sort of basically saying you can't... He says you have to consider that it could be alien technology because that is one of the options. However implausible, that is one of the options. And, I mean, interestingly, so the European Space Agency is sort of scrambling to design a kind of, you know, a mission for getting up there quickly and looking at stuff like this when it comes along. Because we just happened to spot Oumuamua. You know, and we're lucky in that respect. We didn't see it for very long.
Did we get any decent photos? No.
No, no. And so you're in a position where you just think, oh, okay, we need to be able to spot this stuff and then go up and have a look at it as fast as possible. Because, you know, it answers, or it could potentially answer that big question of, are we alone? But Avi's view is, look, this is, you know, potentially a sign of an alien civilization. And that's something we have to sort of take seriously. You know, we might get some useful data out of it if we can spot the next one that comes along.
What's the rest of the scientific community saying?
That he's mad. Yeah. I mean, a lot of them. He's drawn a lot of criticism for this, let me say.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't mind it.
No, I don't mind it at all. I think it's all right. But, you know...
But there isn't... The thing is, there's not a stonewall better explanation.
No, it remains a mystery. I mean, you can conjecture about it. You can say, oh, you know, maybe it's a big shard of ice made of hydrogen or nitrogen or whatever. But, you know, we'll never know, basically, now. So, you know, we better be awake when the next one comes along so we can have a better idea. But, you know, I mean, basically, given how little we know, it sort of makes sense to think about aliens, I think, and alien civilizations and the possibility that they'll come along and might not be friendly. We have to be prepared for that, surely.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell what their intentions are, but let's put it this way. If I were them, I wouldn't be particularly interested in humans on Earth. We just came up with our technologies over the past century. You know, we were not that interesting 10,000 years ago. And by the way, it took Oumuamua more than 10,000 years to traverse the solar system. So perhaps the reason we haven't heard from anyone is that we ourselves are really undeveloped still. And as a result, we don't face a risk of someone coming over. But it might happen one day. And as to the intentions of whoever comes along, that is really up for grabs. We have no clue. And it's not just a question of what is more common, you know, what kind of intentions are more common among all the civilizations that are out there, but who would be the first to come to us? So if an imperialistic drive brings other civilizations to us, then obviously it's not good news. But if it's scientific exploration, it may be good news.
Bit of a risk, then. And are you guys, is it imperialistic stuff or is it more exploratory?
Are the white coats a good sign for us? Or are you just the guys running the mortuary? I mean, you know, it's probable that we couldn't do a lot about it. I mean, if you look at where we're at the moment in terms of our ability to, you know, A, motor through space, and B, defend ourselves, we are sitting ducks, because any civilization that's come in and managed to get across, you know, at least 4.25 light years from Proxima Centauri, then, you know, they've got some technology that we haven't got.
They're outgunning us, maybe.
It's likely that they've got weapons as well as, like, transport, isn't it?
Yeah.
They probably didn't forget to, like, develop weapons. And so we're sort of dead if they decide that, you know, they want Earth for its resources or something.
Yeah.
We're sort of done, aren't we?
Yeah, we can't defend ourselves. I don't think. Not against a civilization that advanced that would be able to get to us.
No.
It would be hopeless.
So we should fear aliens, really, if they do exist.
Well, no, because
like, it's interesting to come and see us.
Yeah.
Does that seem plausible to you?
I mean, so what I'm wondering is, like, you look at our sort of trajectory as humans and, you know, I mean, we've been alive for such a short period of time. But by most measures, although there are obviously loads of wars and stuff going on, maybe we're getting less warmongery.
That's what Steven Pinker would say.
Kill each other less
than
we were, healthier population. Maybe if that is the direction of travel, as you advance, you get better at coexisting without just constantly being in sort of warring factions and stuff.
So what you're saying is, like, an alien civilization, with that kind of technology probably has solved the problem of aggression.
Possibly. Yeah.
I like that idea. That's quite optimistic.
In which case, no worries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Send out as many greetings cards as you like.
But I mean, it's likely as well, isn't it, that you go through these phases of civilization where you destroy yourself. I mean, that's one of the classic sort of problems, is that every civilization ends up destroying itself, you know, with technology or without technology.
That's just pure supposition. We don't know, do we?
Okay, right. But, you know, civilizations come and go. And well, then it might be that humans have the technological capability.
We don't know that, do we? Oh, I suppose we knew in human terms. We know civilization. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's people who've even sort of said, oh, maybe there were civilizations on Earth before our civilization. But,
oh, yeah, that's bollocks, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think that's true.
Yeah, that's not true.
No.
So, we would have found evidence. That's the thing. Like,
I think so.
There's no evidence.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, although some, I've seen the argument that as you get more advanced in your civilization, you realize that you're wreaking havoc on the planet because you need energy to advance your civilization. Mm-hmm. So you get better at not wreaking havoc. So you leave less signature. Yeah, less of a footprint. I'm still not really buying it, to be honest. I mean, I
think that the big issue with that for me is we can plot a pretty good path from the very, very first signs of life emerging on Earth, whenever it was 4.5 billion years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then when it first became multicellular and blah, blah, blah. And there's not really any obvious sort of branching off points where a civilization would develop and then disappear.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, so I mean, humans sort of evolved about 200,000 years ago or so.
250,000 years ago, but obviously we had, you know, our sort of forebears,
Yeah.
You know,
but that's, you know, if we're talking like technological civilizations.
Oh, right. Well, technological, you know, 20,000 years.
Yeah,
maybe?
It's not been very long at all.
But tool use.
That said, in the age of the universe, and yeah, you know, so the universe 13.8 billion years old, right? So there's been a lot of time for other things to happen elsewhere in the universe. So we've just been talking about what's happening on Earth, which is, as we've said, a backwater. So, you know, you've got the position where, obviously, you know, you have the Big Bang, you have to cool everything down to the point where life as we know it can operate. So you get down to sort of room temperature in about 15 million years. And then, you know, then you get about 200 million years for gravity to pull clouds of dust together. So you create all the infrastructure that you need for life to have somewhere to live.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Earth was born after about 9 billion years. Mm-hmm. So other planets presumably might have been born around the same time. So it's taken a long time, really, for life on Earth to evolve. And maybe it didn't take so long elsewhere.
Well, no,
and
so
maybe there's other civilizations that are more advanced that came, you know, maybe came, you know, several billion years before us, and they might have advanced to the point where, you know, they could just pop up through some kind of teleportation or something.
Ah, right. So you're saying we could have been visited before as opposed to...
So we could have been visited.
Like, That to me feels more plausible.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that, you know, gut instinct says didn't happen, but but it's certainly more plausible than another civilization developing on Earth and then vanishing. That feels entirely unlikely to me. So hang on, I think I've got confused with my date. So the Earth is 4.5 billion years old.
No, life is
and life is 3.8.
Life is 3.8, 4.5.
4.5 is the age of the Earth. Okay, so there's perhaps, I mean, there's a lot of there's quite a lot of years before the planet forming and end life.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that it took that long elsewhere is the point,
no,
is it?
No.
So you could have had things happening elsewhere and technological civilizations arriving and, you know, and then just visiting Earth, sort of, you know, having a look around.
Or like I say, just wiping themselves out. So you get to a certain point and then gone. And then it's just a sort of, are you lucky enough to overlap with another technological civilization that is vaguely close by?
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, becomes much less likely, doesn't it?
Yeah. What do you think happens when, you know, if they show up? What's your sort of best guess about, you know, okay, we've spotted aliens or they've just showed up?
As in protocol?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming that the governments of the world kind of rapidly... No?
No.
No?
I mean, there's just no... No real protocol at all.
Well, hang on, is it not going to be like the SETI guys?
So the SETI guys have a protocol. So this is a not-for-profit kind of, you know, a little thing in California.
Search for extraterrestrial intelligence?
Yeah, they've set up a protocol. The guy who's like the head for welcoming the aliens is Paul Davis, you know, the British physicist who now works in Arizona, I think.
He's the welcome committee.
He's basically the guy.
Self-appointed?
No, I think probably appointed from within the, you know, SETI kind of.
But that's effectively self-appointed.
It's a committee. It's a committee of sort of, you know, Western, like, you know, Western minds. So there's no like Asian representation, I don't think, at all
amazing,
on this.
Amazing.
So it's literally like SETI have said, right, well, we'll handle this. I mean, they probably, you know, have been watching maybe, you know, certain films and just sort of decided that somebody needs to be in control of this. But I don't think there's a UN protocol. There's no sort of, and to be honest, the Chinese have just, you know, they've got the biggest telescope in the world, so they're most likely to see.
The Chinese have probably got some plans in place, I reckon.
Yeah, but do you think they include us?
Well, given that we haven't included them,
no. I think the aliens are going to arrive and like, these guys don't get along at all. Nobody's got a clue what to do. But Paul Davis actually thinks that nobody will care when aliens arrive. So he thinks people are just like, oh, you know, just get on with their lives. It won't end like civilization as we know it. People will just sort of shrug.
That, I mean, it entirely depends what the aliens want from us.
I mean, if it's a War of the Worlds kind of situation, then obviously,
I think some people are sitting up and paying some attention.
No, I get that. But, you know, you'd think we'd sort of work all this stuff out, but we haven't really done that yet. So, you know, I mean, there is the question of, are they out there? There's the question of, if they turn up, what do they want? Which sort of makes you say, should we fear the aliens? I mean, that's our whole point. And from everything I understand, I mean, also, it just seems so implausible that they will find us. I mean, it's just such a small amount of civilizations that could be out there.
Mm.
You know, when you do the math and you work it all out, you sort of feel like, you know what, there's not a lot. So when you run the numbers and you look at the sort of Drake equations kind of thing, like, you know, how often will a civilization arise? How will it, you know, how will it mm-hmm. be? Mm-hmm. How long will it last? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We sort of reckon there's maybe nearly 11 billion civilizations, intelligent civilizations in the universe, in the whole universe.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah, that's quite a lot. And maybe more than 70,000 intelligent communicating civilizations in our galaxy alone. So my initial feeling is like, oh, that's never going to happen. There's not going to be anyone there. But actually, when you run the numbers, it becomes like a question that maybe you do need to ask yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, are we ready?
I mean, so my thing is, as those numbers heavily suggest, of course there is other intelligent life out there. So then you get to, okay, it's out there. Are they going to come looking for us? Very hard to say, but given the level of advancement they might reach.
And we would if we could, wouldn't we?
We would, yeah. I think there's a, and who knows if this is a human thing or an Earth thing, but we definitely have the curiosity that would take us out to go looking.
Yeah.
So you suspect that that would be shared by any life.
Yeah.
You don't really know. And if you're looking and if you're very advanced, I don't know what the chances of you finding us or wanting to come are, but they're non-zero, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. And if you're anywhere in our neighbourhood, you'll start to see signs of...
Yeah.
You know, you might come across Voyager or something like that out there. Yeah. And you think, oh, look at the trajectory of that. Let's just follow that back and see what we'll find.
I'm curious to know why the lady doesn't have genitals, but the man does. Let's go and find out. I think this whole question, should we fear an alien invasion, just hinges on what do we think their intention will be. That's it. I don't think there's a question over whether there actually are aliens. I don't think there's a question over whether they would be able to find us. It's just what do they want?
Okay,
and
so
I'm hoping, like I say, that you get to a level where you've just lost all the aggro and they're quite friendly and maybe we don't even know about it. That's what I'm sticking with. I'm sticking with okay. It's going
to
be okay.
So your answer to the big question really is no.
I think if they
nothing
do
to worry
come,
about.
They're going to be benign.
Okay.
Yeah.
My answer is I think if they're going to make the effort, they're probably going to be after something. Mm-hmm. And I think the whole, you know, ant versus human thing, I mean, I feel nothing towards ants, you know. I sort of look at them interestedly, but if I want to kill them, I will kill them.
I won't actually. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Would you pour hot water on ants?
No, that's horrible. I don't know. I don't kill ants. What am I talking about? I don't kill ants, but I might have done in the past.
Okay.
But there's that sort of sense of, if there's a problem... You know, if I'm digging new foundations for an extension or something, I'm not going to say, well, we can't do that because there's an ant's nest there.
No, me neither, actually.
So, you know, so if we have a purpose, then we'll just sort of railroad over that thing. And I think that would be the situation we're in because we're puny, we're not advanced, we are really not a very impressive civilization. And I think if they decided, you know, that they actually wanted to just take over Earth and we had some, you know, resource that they wanted, I think they would take it from us without thinking twice. And so I think, yes, we probably should fear aliens, but there's nothing we can do. I mean, we're sitting ducks.
Yeah. Absolutely defenseless. All right, so the main question of the episode is, should we fear an alien invasion? Let's get an answer from the big man, Avi Loeb.
One thing I've learned from decades of working on research in astronomy is a sense of modesty. The universe is so much bigger than we are. I mean, there are more planets like the Earth in the observable volume of the universe than there are grains of sand on all beaches on Earth. We live for such a short time relative to the age of the universe, one part in 100 million or less than that. And we also, our knowledge is so limited. It's an island in an ocean of ignorance. And so we should be modest. That's my fundamental premise. We should learn about aliens before we decide whether to fear from them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, bit of a cop-out.
I feel that's a cop-out.
But he's right. I mean, he's basically saying, well, there's no way of knowing whether we should fear them yet.
But surely the precautionary principle says, oh, maybe we should actually do something to defend ourselves, prepare ourselves in some way.
Ah, but there is nothing we can do. I firmly believe there's nothing we can do.
So we're just going to cross our fingers and just hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do?
Should we fear aliens? Well,
what's
yes,
the point?
But what's the point?
What's the point? If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And on that optimistic note, I think we'll end. It's a classic case of fingers crossed. Eureka is a Stack production presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. The production team is Andrea Lucia Peters, Luke Moore, and Charlie Morgan. Sound designed by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Professor Avi Loeb, the... Brooksy?
Oh, don't make me do that again.
Go on.
The Frank B. Baird Jr. Professor of Science at Harvard University.
You just did so well. If you like the show, please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a big difference. You can also find us on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently, so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.